So the Midrash tells us, right, that Leah had six, by the Torah tells us, she had six sons, Zebulun being the last one, and then she got pregnant with a seventh child, and somehow she knew this was a male embryo, right? And she said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I have six children, right? Bilha and Zilpah will have four. If I have another one, that means that Rachel is going to be denigrated to being the wife with the least number of children, and I don't want my sister to have to suffer that. And it says Dina is from changing. Hashem changed male Dina into female Dina. Another, so Dina was the daughter, and Dina is from Din, judgment, because Leah, it says, pronounced the judgment on herself that she should not have any more males. Someone else, another shot is Dina, is that it says all of Rachel's three co-wives called out to Hashem and said, enough already, Rabbeinu Shloimeh, please give Rachel a child. Rachel had davened and davened and davened, right? And Yaakov, Leah, Bilhah, and Zilpah, they all governed. And Rosh Hashanah, the Yom HaZikaron, when we know, we're told Hashem Pakad HaSorah, God remembered Sorah, it says she became pregnant with Yosef. And when Yosef was born, she said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has now removed my disgrace, because people always said this notion that Rachel Imenu was a tzedekes was false, because Hashem would never have withheld children for her from her if she had been on that level. And when Yosef was born, she gave him the name Yosef to add. She said, through Ruach HaKodesh, that one more son would be born after him, meaning Binyamin, and that way there would be 12 children. And she was a tefillah, may I, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please have the merit of being the mother of the last child. We're told by Chazal and the Midrash that as soon as Yosef was born, Yaakov realized he now had the antidote to Esav. And he felt it was time to go back to Eretz Yisroel. And he said to Lavan, I'm asking for permission to return back home with my wives and children. He reiterated to Lavan how he had worked for him, but he said, I'm going to tell you something. Should you refuse to let me leave, I'm going, with or without your permission. I prefer to have permission, but I know that my destiny is in Eretz Yisrael. And Lavan said, what is this? This little Yosef gives you the power to think you can go? And Yaakov said, I know that Yosef is the one who will overpower Esav, and I now am able to go. For whatever reason, Chazal tell us that Esav can only be defeated by a son of Rachel. It says, Esav is compared to straw, and Yosef is compared to a flame which consumes the straw. Yosef is victorious over Esav because Esav is Tumma, impurity personified, and Yosef is Kedusha, purity. In addition, it says, Yosef is going to be the only one able to answer Esav's arguments. In future, all of the Shvatim will get into an argument. The sons of Yaakov will say, what did you do, Esav? Why did you pursue your brothers? And he's going to turn around and say, you're talking about me? Look what you did to Yosef. You're no better than I am. And the tribes, for whatever reason, won't reply. Yosef will also ask Yaakov, and Esav will say, right? Yaakov did evil to me. He mistreated me. I got to take revenge, right? It's your just dessert. And Yosef said, hold on. You had one brother against you. I had 10 mistreating me. And I never acted in any shape, manner, or form like you did. Esav, it says, will then lose his ability to speak. Lavan then says to Yaakov, I have now discovered through the black magic, witchcraft, that the only reason I now have sons, whereas before you came I had none, and the only reason I became wealthy is because I was blessed on your account. It says, we're quoting from the Medrash, that a tzaddik brings bracha to the neighborhood he moves into. The loved one says, I really can't afford to let you go. I mean, you're my key to riches. He says, let's make a deal. And Yaakov says, okay, give me the speckled and spotted goats and dark sheep that will be born from now on in your herd. And he agreed. Yaakov then said, separate from your herds all the speckled goats and dark sheep, so you will never have a claim that I took anything of yours. Lavan did as he did. However, he cheated. Right? He even took away white sheep and goats, basically, the healthy ones, and all he gave Yaakov was a flock of weak and barren animals. Basically, you're screwed. In spite of this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who controls all, made these animals fertile, and they only gave birth to speckled and spotted, right, animals as required by agreement. And this continued, and Yaakov accumulated a large herd, a large flock of animals. When Lavan saw this, he went nuts. He says, let's switch the other way. No, he says, from now on, I get the spotted, you get the striped. And so once again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, okay, what Yaakov's supposed to get, Yaakov will get. And when Lavan realized the bracha that Yaakov got again, he basically became totally enraged. It says, Lavan tried and broke the agreement every chance he had. It says here 100 times, right? Different, he tried all forms of witchcraft, all the black magic that existed to try to basically harm Yaakov. But of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't allow that to happen. Hashem sent a Moach to Yaakov, and we're told it's in a dream, because all Nevuah, we've been told, is in a dream other than what Moshe Rabbeinu had. And he showed that he would get whatever animals he was to get, and that loved ones' machinations would have no effect whatever on him. And Yaakov became one of the largest owners, I guess, of cattle, of sheep and goats, rather. And I imagine he was able to trade it for other things. And the Medrash tells us that Yaakov became a person of wealth. He had hundreds of thousands of animals, which he could trade for gold, silver, for male and female servants, and for other type of animals that he might need, such as donkeys and camels. So the question is, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu create a situation that Yaakov, right, would have to in some way outwit Lavan? We're told about he took various kinds of sticks and he put them in the trough when they drank and when they made it somehow. He basically went through a, you would say, excuse me, thank you. He went through a measure of seemingly, you would say, arranging what kind of birth would happen. But all of us who look at it know that this cannot, in effect, right, be what causes, I call it the DNA of animals, etc. But yet he had to go through this bickering and right, trying to outsmart Lavan. It says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right, knew that B'nai Yisroel, in its years of exile, needs, right, some type of ability to wheel and deal. And therefore, Yaakov went through this situation to create, you would say, the genetics to give this ability to Klal Yisroel, because we're told, Simen, right? Maisa Avoy Simen Labanim. The things that happened to our forefathers, hardships, tribulations, right, put into the combined backbone of Klal Yisroel the ability to withstand the scoundrels who Klal Yisroel have met and still meet in this world. This situation of Yaakov being wealthy and maybe even as wealthy as Lavan made his sons totally jealous. And they said, you know what, this Yaakov guy, he stole everything that he has from our fathers. And they said Yaakov was a scoundrel. He made all these moves, which he didn't, right, to cheat our father. In other words, as happens, as the Arabs do today, we'll just reinterpret history. Reality has no basis. Our fables are what carries the day. And Yaakov realized that Lavan himself had, you would say, a disdain. He basically showed his anger at Yaakov, and Yaakov realized, for sure, it's time to go. And he asked his wives, Rachel and Leah, right? And he said to them, right, here's how anything that I have was acquired. It's all a bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I did nothing. I created nothing. And I had a nevuah that, right, Hashem wants me to leave. And he said, I need your permission. I'm not leaving unless you agree. And they said to him, we have nothing here. Our father treated us like chattel. He sold us to you. He never tried to do anything. Instead of giving us a dowry, he tried to basically, right, exploit you to the nth degree. And whenever he sees anything that we have, he gets jealous and he tries to take it away. We have no father here. And I guess if they were brothers, they weren't brothers. This is basically a place we can't live. Yaakov waited until Lavan left to shear his flocks, where his sons were, and apparently it was a three-day distance, and that's the day they left. And we know the unfortunate situation is that Rachel took Lavan's getchkes, his trophim, his idols. It says these things were objects of an ancient form of idol by which meek worshippers could somehow figure out the future. It says the idol worshippers used to slaughter a firstborn child, take the skull, put salt and oil on it. They put a piece of paper under the spot where the tongue would be, or maybe they left the tongue in of the skull, and they put there what we call the Shemois Hatuma, the names of demons. They hung these things on the wall, lit candles in front of it, and they burned incense. And through the power of Kishuv, as we say, the dark side, these idols had the ability to speak. And Lavan was one of the greatest proponents of this. Maybe that's how he got successful. He could cheat all his guys he did business with, knowing what would happen. Rachel took them for two reasons. She said, the time has come for this old man to stop believing in this garbage. If I can make him stop serving idols, I've done something positive. And it says she wanted to preclude Lavan from saying to his trophim, How do I get Yaakov? Where did he go, etc.? And it says that she had proper motivation to take them. But it says why, in fact, we find she was punished. It says she was punished because she caused grief to her father. And when Yaakov coupled that with the curse that he said, if anybody stole your getchkes, right, they are going to die, that was fait accompli. And, you know, it's all nice to say, but I don't think we can really understand what it means. I don't think we can really understand divine calculations or anything. 3 days later, Lavan comes home, and he sees what happened. A messenger lets him know, right? You know what happened 3 days ago? Our water well suddenly dried up. You know the bracha that we had for the last 20 years? That we had abundant water and that the water overflowed its banks? It stopped. We waited till you got back because we figured you'd have the solution, Lavan. And Lavan said, oh boy, I know it. Yaakov left. So, strange guy. He realizes that what he had was caused by Yaakov, right? And he knows now he's basically losing the blessings that came because of Yaakov. And, right, he decides he's going to use force. I'm going to force Yaakov to come back. I'm going to force whatever is God to bless me. Now, you know, think about the warped mind of Avodah Zarah. You're going to force the Almighty. But that was the path you went on. And he said, I'm going to now destroy Yaakov. So we can see, right, the idea that he was going to basically just make sure he never got bracha wasn't his main concern, revenge. He now became an exceedingly vengeful human being. Excuse me. And one of the interpretations of the words in the Haggadah, right, when we say Arami Oved Avi, an Arami wanted to kill my father, is this Lavan we're now talking about was out to kill Yaakov. And the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu frames this in the Chumash, which where it comes from, is he actually did it. In other words, HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically says to Lavan, you might, if I hadn't stopped you, it might have happened. And because that's what you really wanted to do, we're going to give you the credit of having caused the Holocaust. We know that Lavan catches up to Yaakov, and the night before, again, he's given a chance to relent. God says to him, Lavan, you know, don't you dare talk to Yaakov, good or bad. And what happens the next day? Like Bilam, who Lavan was the forefather of, I can ignore all this. And he basically gives Yaakov a litany of all his unjustified complaints, right? And he asks who stole my getchkes, and Yaakov says no one, and right, he doesn't find them, and you know, he then he wants to make a deal with Yaakov. You know, okay, now that I can't hurt you, let's make a deal. You won't hurt me, etc., etc. And right, Lavan finally says, as he lies, I would have never hurt my kids, my daughters, my grandchildren. All I wanted to do was kiss them goodbye. Right? Yeah, as he put them in the grave. And, you know, that's the story of another anti-Semite and his attempt to do things. Finally, Lavan leaves. It says he even kisses, right, and blesses his grandsons, Dina. And this was a show. Every kavana that he had was evil. The blessing was, may God basically put you in the grave. Once Lavan returned home, he found out what life was about. God took away all his wealth, and he ended up being a pauper. Right? The night he had left to chase Yaakov, to kill him, it says God sent burglars into his house and cleaned him out of everything. Yaakov leaves, and it says, as he enters Eretz Yisroel, he's met by two camps of 600,000 lochem, which is the inverse of what happened with the ladder. The Malachim from Eretz Yisroel come down, the Malachim from Chutz Laaretz go up, and we then end up going into next week with Yishlach, where we find out about Yaakov preparing to see Esau.